We're live, Greg Eric.
We're back at it.
ArcLight 2023, the Nailed Convention 2023 here in the Dallas Market Center, Dallas, Texas.
Getting together, seeing people, that's what it's all about.
And we're with Rachel Fitzgerald and Jessica Smith of StanTech, and we're going to have a great conversation with them about the workplace, I believe.
That's correct, right. That's right.
But before we do that, you got to go to KeystoneTech.com, buddy. That's KeystoneTech.com, folks.
So here's one example of why I love Keystone, okay? They have a lot of options out there. Here's their wall pack that was meant to replace a traditional wall pack. Look how big and clunky
that is. That's a packy wall.
That's
pack
a pack. Hold
that's
that a big for
pack.
Me, Mike.
Look at that pack.
So here's what happens. And they look at that and they say, that's a bit clunky. We have a lot of them, but you know what? We're going to upgrade it. Same fit, same profile, but slimmer. That looks a lot nicer. Same output. Everything there, power select, color select, photo cell built on. You don't have to think about it. You can get it on, and it's nice and thin.
What about the driver, Greg Air?
The driver is Keystone.
Oh, yeah. Keystone makes their own drivers. So you got to go to KeystoneTech.com. And, of course, do you have light bulbs in a warehouse? You're watching this on LinkedIn. You think you're hot stuff? Why don't you join Nailed? Come where the tough guys are. That's right. Go to nailed.org, baby. Rachel, Jessica, welcome to the Get a Grip on Lending podcast.
Thank you for having us. We're excited to be here.
So we're here to talk a little bit about the future of workplace lighting design. But before we get into the lighting design, I think we need to talk about the future of the workplace. What does it look like? Do you guys know this answer? Are people going to be in a workplace?
Let's go to Jessica first.
Yeah.
Definitely yes, in a workplace.
All right.
And something that's constantly changing. Yeah. So what we thought it was coming right out of the pandemic is something different than it is today. We'll be in 2 years from now. So our design is... We're trying to be at the forefront of all of that and predicting and making things flexible for what it will be in the future.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about StanTech. What do you guys do there?
StanTech is a large multidisciplinary. So we've got a buildings group that does a lot of architecture, interiors, urban planning, landscape, pretty much anything in the built environment. And we're part of our lighting team. So we've got a specialty team that does lighting design. And that's what we're here representing.
Is it for new construction primarily, or you guys do renovation, retrofit, all that stuff?
All of the above. So we do a lot of roadway and infrastructure, new construction, renovations, pretty much anything that's construction in any form is fair game. Mm-hmm.
So we just had a panel group with Adam Lillian from UL on his circadian lighting. The UL has a new standard for this.
Yep.
A lot of skepticism was in the room. Okay, about the ability for electric light to deliver these kinds of results. Are you guys incorporating that into your lighting designs? And if so, how?
Yes and no. We're definitely, so Jessica's a WELL AP. Mm-hmm. I'm on the WELL content advisory for the light. And it's definitely something we're very aware of and conscientious of in our design is the human perception of light and how it can impact our sleep-wake cycle, which can impact our effectiveness, our productivity, all those things. And so what we're trying to do is integrate dynamic lighting systems into our projects where it makes sense. And one of the biggest things we feel that helps support is just that occupant well-being of people feel better. They get to sense a passage of time. They get changed throughout the day. And hopefully all of that is also helping with some of the science of that, the data, the numbers, as part of those circadian calcs. But we're generally looking at it as a design standpoint, more from kind of that visual quality of experience.
So there's a quality of the experience. People walk in, they like the interior design, they like the lighting, they feel better. It's appropriate levels of light. But are you offering controllability to the individual user when you said dynamic? What do you mean by dynamic? Does that mean the lights are changing constantly? They're changing with the seasons, with the sun setting or not? Or is it people changing them to their preferences?
Depends on the project and depends on the need. So we've got an example of a facility that's a manufacturing facility for aircraft. Mm. They work 3 shifts. So you've got shift work. You've got people working day and you've got people working night.
Mm-hmm.
They all need to have an equitable experience. Mm-hmm. But obviously those people at night don't have
that's
daylight.
That's not possible.
Right. So what can we do within the built environment and the constraints we have? How can we use lighting to support that? So we're going to set a fixed schedule that starts at the beginning of their shift and that light changes throughout till the end of their shift.
Do you know what to do with those third tier shift workers, people working in the middle of the night? Like, it's bad for your health. Like, we know this. It's not a secret that being a shift worker is not good.
Right.
And all the statistics are bad. Is there some way we can support them? Do you know that? I mean, is it data-based?
We feel like we can help support that as compared to a standard baseline static system.
Is that how much of the benefits, and for those listening to this, I'm making quotations while holding a Modelo beer here. But anyway, I think they got the point. I'm going to put the beer down. But how much of that, you know, is... See, this is where I lean back and I don't know what to do, because you give someone controllability over their lights. What I notice is they tend to dim them, okay? And, you know, some people black them out completely. Mm-hmm. You know, at what point, how do we measure the controllability of the individual user versus these prescriptive circadian things that are telling us what someone must have? Even if they don't personally like it, how can it be healthy?
Right. So part of it's an education. There's a huge component there that's education. And that, for us as designers, is a piece we can't control.
Mm.
How much can we help educate the client so they can make informed decisions? And then how much are they going to educate their occupants, their employees, to use the systems that we're providing for the best intent? Manufacturing facility, where you've got set shift work, you've got life safety concerns there. They can't dim those lights. They need high-level working lights so they're not getting endangered by this large equipment.
Mm.
Take that conversation to a 9-to-5 office place, totally different.
Yeah.
People want to influence their space. They want to dim those lights, set their personal needs, and that may or may not be what's best for them. So that's where we have to educate the client and hope that the educated client can help inform their users to use it in the best way.
Are they asking for this education, or are you guys telling them? This wouldn't even know.
You know, the hope is they're hiring us and looking to us as the experts in the room. And so we try to educate our clients and give them the options.
Sure.
Not all clients want options or to be educated, but a lot of them do.
So is it as simple as, you know, we look at it in lighting terms, like you can either retrofit or you can put a new fixture in. You're saying you can either do this and get light, or you can make it healthy or circadian friendly light. Here's your two options.
Yes. In a very simple way, we're giving them options of, here's a basic standard code compliant solution, or here's what we can do to elevate this to hopefully work better for you, create better performing occupants that have less turnover. So you're having to hire less, train less. That all has financial incentive for employers.
What do you think the percent price differences on average? Do you have that number in mind?
You know, I don't have a set number. Yeah. As Jessica laughs.
It's $1 million.
I mean, is it like a double? Anytime I've looked at
the costs are coming down.
Okay.
So, and it depends. Are you doing individual control so that your desk is separately controlled than your desk?
Right.
That's a lot more expensive still.
Sure.
Or are you going to zone an area, and are you going to provide individual control in private spaces? So whether it's a zone solution, you know, in some cases we're seeing a 15% adder to add it in some sense. To do wholesale throughout projects, you're probably looking at more like a 50% adder.
Sure.
So there is a cost impact. And that's part of why we give clients options of, we're going to educate you on the options. You have to have energy efficiency, code compliance. You got to do the right things as a baseline. But the things beyond that are, we're going to educate you and give you options.
Here's what I've said before. Maybe Jesse, you can chime in. But to really, truly have
healthy... Are we calling her Jesse now?
It's Jessica. Jessica. I thought I did. Yeah.
I heard it right.
Yeah, I was clear. I've always said that to really, truly have healthy lighting, I need a floating light that goes with me everywhere. You know, just bring that thing everywhere. Can we ever get to that point?
And tying back to our workplace discussion, and there's, you know, certain needs for, you know, the type of space that you have. So we talked about in our presentation about we're sitting on Teams calls and what you need for that. And that's different for how you look on screen versus how you feel in the space. And so we're considering all of those different things within the workplace environment. So it's, you know, adding on to that conversation of healthy lighting and what we're doing and what we're adding in with a possible circadian system, then bringing it back to the tasks that they need and things that they need within the space in regards to lighting.
So you guys did a presentation today. What were the highlights of it that you can share with us, other than what we've already talked about?
We did have a lot of fun with our presentation. We had audience participation, getting some questions and answers from them, just to hear people's perspective on, you know, what do you need out of an office space, because that's, you know, changed over the past couple of years. But some of the highlights being that we're looking at flexible solutions, and that's really important. And also that what we just mentioned about that dynamic of how you look on screen versus how you are in the space, that equity between people who are joining a meeting from their remotely from their screen, what can they see and what can their participation look like versus how it looks in the space. And then also adding in the mental health component and what we're doing with design, specifically lighting design, to help aid in that experience in the office.
Jessica.
We've gotten all three of them in here now.
You're talking about mental health and as it relates to lighting. And, you know, I know that good lighting and good interior design, you know, make people feel better. Mm-hmm. That's true. But I don't know what the parameters of that are for across a population level analysis. It's extremely personal, and it may also be cultural as well. How do you, in places like Toronto, very multicultural city I live in, mm-hmm. you know, you have the United Nations living in that city now. How do you weigh all these different factors?
And I think that comes down again to that flexibility in different environments. So we talked about the added need now for spaces like a phone room or a wellness room where you can go, you know, maybe your neighbor's on a Teams call and it's loud and you just need a moment to come to a quieter space. And so implementing spaces like that with lighting that you can change control. So like you said, how people are dimming down the lights so low that they have that flexibility to be able to do that. And that's not just in those private spaces either. The WELL Building Standard LEED both have credits that they give for allowing employees and occupants to change lighting, even within your open office area, if they have something at their own station that they're able to adjust the lighting. And so I think that's kind of what we're seeing is that flexibility, that individual control, added controls in a space so that people can, because like you said, it changes based on where you are in the world and people's preferences. We can't make that a blanket solution. So it's at the individual control.
I've even heard, and again, I'm not a researcher. I'm only doing 500 podcasts on lighting. So I hear these different things, like even color temperature preference changes based on culture. Mm-hmm. So different cultures prefer different color temperatures in their general area lighting. In Sweden, they have a bylaw that you can't have a desk without a window adjacent to it. You have to be able to see outside. And how do we, and we know how important natural light is to these cycles that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. We're here at the Dallas Market Center, beautiful natural light in here. You know what I mean? You almost feel like you're outside. Yeah. Like that's how beautiful it is. How are we incorporating natural light with sun tunnels, skylights, windows? What do they call that? The French word. The French word.
I'm not speaking French here.
Fenestration.
Yeah.
Fenestration is the word I was looking for. How are you guys incorporating that into your Stantec practice? You said multidisciplinary. How often are you using natural light?
A lot. I think the key is we try to look at things holistically. So whether that's starting from the time, you know, a new ground up project is coming to light. But looking at things like your building orientation, looking at your fenestration ratios, looking at how you're going to have that daylight come in. Is it direct daylight? Does it need to be diffuse? Are you going to get glare? Do we need to add solar tubes or some other means to get even distribution of daylight? So ideally, the best designs are ones that are maximizing the availability of the free natural daylight, and giving us, as you're saying, window with views. So it can't just all be clear story and skylight. It's got to be something where you can actually see the outdoors, get that biophilic component, see nature, interact with nature from that view. So that's step one, is we want to maximize that natural light penetration. So we've got staff and teams that do daylight analysis and run models and run studies and look at should the windows be this size or that size? And what if we change the R values and all these things? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of step one before we even start to look at putting electric lighting into a project. It starts with how do we get the most out of the daylight and using the natural light that's available. And then we have to layer that in. Then as we go to start to add our electric light, how is that going to get added so that it's balancing the natural light? We take the space we're in right now as an example, great daylit atrium. And as you've got these offshoot wings that go into darker interior spaces, how do you make sure that those still are comfortable and transition well and you don't feel like you just walked into a dark tunnel? So you've got to balance your daylit spaces with your non-daylit and make sure it all feels really cohesive.
I get it. In a new construction project, easy all day. But how about redesign of an existing facility? Are you doing a lot of that? And can you implement a lot of these practices? How?
A lot of that, particularly as we were talking about workplace today, a lot of that in workplace even goes from old designs that are now outdated. Mm-hmm. 10, 20, 30 years ago, office design is very different than today's office design.
But are we better?
Yeah, I think we are. From a, you know, we used to put, you know, all the executives get to go on the perimeter glass with a private office with all solid walls. So they're, you know, closed in a box out of sight. Today, it's all about transparency and having view glass and limiting those private offices or putting them in key internal places where you've got external views and putting them in the corner. You know, the way they're laying out and space planning, the footprint of the office has changed, which is allowing us to get much better daylight penetration and change what may have been an old dark interior feeling office space into really a nice daylit, bright, welcoming space.
You see, seeing a lot of just shared office space, desk space? Are you still doing cubicles or what do you guys do when you get new offices?
It definitely depends on the client. Mm-hmm. We've worked on law firm projects that kind of have a different approach. But a lot of them are more of that open office space, open workstation areas, and allowing those spaces or the shared spaces like a break room to be those areas where we have good views and bringing as much natural light in as we can.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about using a lot of glass, mm-hmm. right? I've seen these offices where you go in and it's glass, so everyone has a view of the outside no matter where you are in the space you can walk through. And I mean, I don't know, there is sort of less privacy in that you can see the person sitting at their desk, but there still is an aspect of sound barrier that's there. So there is that privacy of what you're talking about. Is this an expensive way to build? Is it an environmentally friendly way to build to use that much glass?
There's considerations for that, but a lot of what we're seeing, and we're not the experts on interior design, but from what we're seeing as lighting designers, you know, they're using a lot of like demountable wall systems. So it's a panelized wall system that has a glass or a glazing in it. Sometimes it's fritted, frosted, sometimes it's clear, to give you that transmission of daylight and to see activated spaces. But they're reconfigurable. So unlike drywall, where if in 5 years you got to reconfigure all your offices, you're just going to knock that drywall down, throw it in a landfill.
Sure.
In this scenario, these are essentially demountable wall partitions that can be taken down, moved, reused, relocated, reconfigured. So you can get a lot longer life out of those. And they're a lot, they offer a lot more flexibility for clients if they take advantage of it. There's certainly cases where that's not the case.
That's what I mean. With the lighting, it's the same thing with lighting with this. Oh yeah. Don't down the road. If you want to reconfigure your switching system, you can reconfigure. Never.
But how many people do it?
Never happens.
Right. Yeah.
Light fixtures are more likely to be ripped out. You know, Greg, while I have a final question here on the humans that are in this space. Mm-hmm. So you got people, right? Most people just accept whatever lighting system is in the building and they go to work, right? Are we designing for a small proportion of complainers?
I wouldn't say so. I think that, people come into a space and they kind of accept what is, and we're looking at all of the factors in a workplace project. We're thinking about glare, the amount of light that people need. So we're, you know, depending on the location and everything like that, we as designers are implementing something that is, you know, proven standards and it's, you know, meeting things that we need. We're providing the flexibility and controllability that people have. And then another bigger aspect is education to that, you know, the client and the occupants of the space. So in projects where we have implemented a dynamic lighting system, It's not going to be beneficial if they don't know what's going on with it, right? So it's educating them to know what controllability that they have so that they're able to use it and make it the best space for them.
And then one, can I add one thing
of
to
course.
That? I think the key that Jessica mentioned is flexibility. And that's the biggest thing we're seeing in workplace design is very few people in, for a lot of client spaces, are going to go sit at their desk all day. The point of being back in the office is to collaborate with people, interact with people, and to have that professional social component of the physical workplace. Otherwise, we'd all still just be sitting remote somewhere doing our job. And so the key to that is providing flexibility and varied space. So someone might sit at their desk for half the day. They might go sit in a private phone booth for a couple hours. They may go sit at a collaboration space with lounge seating where they can sit and talk with their peers and discuss solutions. So we're trying to make sure that we're catering to everybody by providing unique spaces throughout a single project so that if one space doesn't meet your needs, there's another space that does.
Make this, everybody happy.
I don't know if you can do that.
I see skepticism.
You know, it's funny. It's hard to conceptualize all this stuff. Like when I only practice lighting, and it's all energy efficiency. That's the number one driver. And is there an element of lighting design, Greg, in your practice?
An element of it, right?
Oh, you want center basket troffers instead of flat panels, right? You want me to put a track up here for you? Okay, no problem. So we have we're not as deep. You guys are deep into the thoughtfulness of this kind of practice. There's a company here. I'm not going to say the name because they're not a Nailed member and they didn't sponsor this podcast, but they make fake skylights and windows.
Yep.
And so I bought two of those and I put one in the producer's office. He's well aware of it. And the producers, there's two of them. They know it's fake. They know it's a light fixture, but it has the effect. It has the effect of you look in that room and it feels like there's a skylight in that room and it changes color over the course of the day and everything like that. How much are we going to see this technology making inroads into general lighting? And is it a good thing or does that, even if you're being tricked, the feeling of being tricked, maybe it's good. You know what I mean? I don't know. These types of technologies are really advancing. Do you guys foresee that becoming a part of the regular general lighting question in the future?
I think we're going to see more of it, and I say that because when you go to yet a larger scale of efficiency and energy, we have such an immense existing building stock.
That all the buildings are already built
that,
that exist.
That can be rehabilitated, reused, reconfigured. That not every project, as you guys have asked some key questions about, not every project's going to be a new out-of-the-ground fancy building. A lot of projects are reconfiguring, rehabilitating, revitalizing existing structures. And a lot of those weren't designed to maximize daylight, to maximize energy efficiency, to do the things that today we think of as good design. And so I think we're going to continue to see growth of some of those daylight imitation products because, just as you said, they can be effective. They can create that feel, even if you know they're make-believe from a standpoint of
he knows it's not a real skylight. Knows it.
But does that affect how you feel? If you might feel better because you feel like you got some sun on you. I think there's some of that mental component of things just feel better and then you're happier, whether it's real or not.
I think that's the essence of interior design and lighting is the feelings that people have about the lighting.
Yeah.
You know, and or the design. They're not even really thinking about lighting. They don't know how much a part lighting's playing of it. Final thoughts for the Get a Grip on Lighting listeners. Let's start with Jess, Jesse, Jessica. One of those
all
three.
All of the above.
Yeah.
Final thoughts. I think we're just in an exciting space as we've put together this presentation. This is the second time we've done it. It's just an exciting topic. It's the future of where we're going in workplace design. While it's challenging that it changes a lot and the answers feel like they're changing and evolving. It's something that's exciting. And like the new products, like you said, these skylights that are starting to look more and more real. It's things that we can start to implement in our workplace and these areas that we're spending time in a more informed way. So that's why we're, you know, we came to share it today and why we're excited
about it. I have one more question before you give your final
thoughts.
I don't know who you're going to ask.
Go for it.
Okay. When is lighting going to start fighting for more of the energy pie? We're constantly being leaned on for energy efficiency, whether that's retrofit. Everyone's, well, you need to save energy? Go change the lights. Make them more LEDs. Yep. Make it more. When are we going to start as an industry saying, you know, we actually need more energy now? We need to take back a little bit because we need to do these skylights, which are not energy efficient. I'm going to be honest with you. It's not an efficient way to produce light.
I don't know that we're going to have to come back and start saying we need more. But I think the reality of if you go back historically and look at over every energy cycle, lighting is cut. And if you look at those percentages, you can't keep chunking out those same big percentages of energy savings.
We're running out of watts.
Cycle after cycle. It's just you're not going to create healthy, effective spaces if you leave us with the bottom barrel of energy. And we're right up there. I mean, we've done net zero energy. We've done net carbon. I mean, we want to do energy efficient design, but it shouldn't be at the cost of creating great, comfortable spaces that support the people using them. So there has to be a balance. So I don't know if that's going to end up in us asking for more power back, but I definitely think there's limits to how much further we can be the ones making big strides to cut the energy.
I think that's a great place, unless you have other thoughts you want to give to get a grip on lighting audience here before we go.
I think my only final thought is I feel like I say this every year and all the time because our industry is changing so quickly.
Oh, man.
And to me, that's what I always think is so fascinating and part of what I enjoy about being in this industry. It's never static.
Yeah. No way.
What was cool and new a year or two ago is, you know, that's old news.
It wasn't.
And
it wasn't
stuff.
Even static before LED. It was changing back then. With fluorescent, we got a 28 watt. We got a 25 watt.
Keep it going.
But it's always changing, and that's what I always think is exciting. Is what we're talking about today. It's going to be something different tomorrow, and that's what keeps it interesting and evolving.
Rachel Fitzgerald, Jessica Smith, we're going to need you to go to KeystoneTech.com. That's KeystoneTech.com. Gregor,
we got the slim line.
I'm going to go with the fat boy right here. Yeah,
the fat one. I got the slim one. Both fit that profile, power and color select, and all sorts of options for it, sizes and everything. So even white finish, if you want that, they got it.
White finish is nice, actually.
It can
sometimes.
Work. Yeah, you got a white building, white wall pack. Whoa.
Go to KeystoneTech.com. That's KeystoneTech.com. And you think you're a big shooter, eh? You got a little warehouse with light bulbs in it? Why don't you join Nailed? That's right. You don't have the guts, sucker. No, I'm just joking. If you have a warehouse with light bulbs in it, you take orders over your counter, on the website, over the phone, whatever it is, you go to naild.org and you become part of your association and you influence policy, you make decisions. We just made a lot of decisions about an hour ago.
There you go. That's what we do here.
Yeah, we just made a lot of decisions about what we're going to do. So the rest of you out there, if you're not a distributor, you're not a part of Nailed, I'm all tangled up in this big fat boy right here, go to naild.org. And of course, we love all you people out there. Thank you for listening and watching. Bye for now.